Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, March 5th, March already, on 91.7 WHUS stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. My co-host Ron Meniza is downstairs watching the game. So we're coming to you live from Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let me know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch ND. Facebook has now made a rule that they're only going to keep Facebook Live episodes for 30 days. They're no longer going to let you keep them on indefinitely. So you have 30 days to watch me on Facebook Live. I may go ahead and figure out how to download the show and post it to YouTube. And if I do that, I will let you know. And then I'll start posting to YouTube and then it can be in my YouTube channel indefinitely. Anyway, so that was kind of an interesting development. Also, hi, if you're watching on Instagram Live, I have a filter that gives me a little hibiscus flower or whatever flower this is. This one's the one on my my personal left side is virtual. And so you're looking at a mirror image of me. And so if you see my Bicycles International shirt, it's backwards. And I haven't figured out how to fix that. Anyway, so one of the flowers is virtual and one of them is real. So this is a real, I mean, it's not a real flower. It's a cloth flower or plastic flower or something, but they look sort of similar. So I thought that was kind of funny. Anyway, and on Facebook Live, I only have the one actual flower that's attached to my head. Just for something fun to do. It's stuffy in this room where I'm recording, so I'm wearing short sleeves, even though I'm not sure it's even 30 degrees out right now. So anyway, just to remind you, the views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. All right, so I had a nice day today. I'm recording this on a Sunday, and I went with Ron to his extreme spin class, and I actually felt good after the class, which was not the case when I went back on February 19th. February 19th? No, January 19th. Yeah, because February 19th was a Wednesday. So it was January 19th. So I feel much better, and I don't know, it could be a number of things. I've been diligently riding on my trainer downstairs using Zwift. So I'm that much further along in winter bike training. Also, I'm 61 years old. So I was using an app to note my my percent heart rate, my work efforts. So the watts, I don't trust the wattage on the spin bikes at the gym. I trust the ones on my trainer doing Zwift more. So it's telling me I'm working at a much higher wattage than I'm working regularly on Zwift downstairs. I think the Zwift one is more accurate. But anyway, so the heart rate zones I was using were keyed into the app I'm using to record my my workout. And I had my max heart rate for a 61-year woman set to 185 beats per minute. And that may be part of why I felt awful. I didn't feel well after the last workout because I was just pushing myself. I was spending way too much time in too high a heart rate for me. So I wanted to lower my max heart rate. So there are some calculators you can use, some calculations you can use if you want to know what your max heart rate is, if you want to monitor your heart rate while you're working out to see if you're getting a good workout and if you want to work out in various zones and train yourselves. So one of the classic thing to do is the formula where you go 220 minus your age. So 220 minus my age, 220 minus 61 comes out to 160 and or is 161 anyway. So it's around 160, 161, or maybe it's 159. Maybe it's 159 because I'm 61. Anyway, so to set it that low seemed like it was too low for me because I'm able to still be breathing. I can still talk to you at 160 beats a minute. I'm working very hard, but I can still talk to you. It doesn't feel like it's my max heart rate. So I searched online to see if there was a better calculator. And I found a calculator, very simple calculator, at the Norwegian School of the Norwegian University of Science and Technology. And they have a calculator on there. It still just does it uses your BMI. It doesn't just use your age. It uses your age plus your gender plus your BMI. So that figures a few more things into it. And it's not perfect because they don't know. It doesn't figure on how hard I'm working out, what my muscle mass is. There's nothing like that. They did have a calculator on there where they calculated my athletic age. And because I put in that I work pretty hard and I exercise most days, they said my athletic age is 37 years old. That's pretty cool. I don't know how true that is, but okay. That was very interesting. But when I calculate, when I use their calculator that does basically your BMI and your plus your age plus your gender as your to calculate what your max heart rate is, I came up with a better number, and that was 172. So it was definitely lower. It was, 13 points lower than the 185 I was using, but 12 points higher than the 160, which I thought was a little light. So I used that, and I set the app to use that as my max heart rate. So it set up the zones that way. And the way I work out is that when you're on the spin bike, you have a little lever that controls the resistance. So I used the resistance. So the resistance plus how fast I'm spinning will give me a certain heart rate that is calculated as a percent of my max ability to work out. And Ron calls out when he's teaching the class, he calls out what percent of your max heart rate you should be doing. So I followed that and kept my heart rate without regard to, I used the levers to set myself so I was in those heart rate zones. And regardless of how hard I thought I could work, I decided to keep myself in the heart rate zone. So there are parts of the workout where I was working very hard, and then he would tell us to go down to, say, 75% max, and I would have to use, in order to get my heart rate down, I'd have to put it at a lower resistance. So I just did that, and I had a great workout. I felt really good. I felt like I worked hard, but I didn't kill myself. I didn't feel sick afterwards, and I was very pleased. I got through the class. It's an hour and a half class full of intervals, and I felt good. So tomorrow, when I ride, probably going to ride indoors. We're going to have, the temperature's going to get up to maybe as high as 45 around here, but that's a little chilly, and it's not going to get there till right in the middle of the day. So I'm probably going to ride indoors because I can ride earlier. Wednesday, however, we're going to get into the 50s. So I'm going to hit that 50 mark. I'm going to get out at 11 o'clock and ride in the 50 degree weather. So and just be real careful because the roads are still not perfect. But I'm psyched because the weather's getting warmer. And soon it's going to be daylight savings time that first weekend. So if you're listening to this when it's being broadcast on WHUS, it's March the 5th. And this weekend is daylight savings time. So we're going to spring ahead, which everybody loves because we lose an hour of sleep and people just don't feel well. So I'll probably talk about that next week, why daylight savings time is no fun and why you don't feel good and some things you can do about it. I'm fortunate because, we lose that hour of sleep overnight from Saturday to Sunday, and I don't have to see patients until Tuesday. One of the things that happens is that the sunrise happens later again. So it's dark, going to be dark again at now in the 6 o'clock hour, the sun is out. It's going to go back to, the sun is going to rise again, probably sometime in the early 7 o'clock hour. But then it's going to gradually get earlier and earlier because we are gaining minutes rapidly right now. I mean, the sunset and the sunrise the sunrise is getting earlier and earlier, and the sunset is getting later and later. So that's going to continue to happen until the solstice again, and then we'll go the other way. But we're in that time of year where we're gaining minutes, which is kind of exciting. So anyway, so I found that I was happily, I found a happy way to calculate my max heart rate. So if you want to do that, you can go to the website for the Norwegian University of Science and Technology, and the way it's the words in Norwegian are not stated in that order, so it's NTSU instead of NUT NUST. So look for, I believe it's NTSU, that's where you would go, and look for the max heart rate calculator, and it's for men and women because you select your gender. And of course, if you are not You're not directly male or female. You're non-binary or you're trans. You can't. It doesn't account for that. So you have to pick the. I suppose you would pick the gender you most identify with. If you're non-binary, I'm not sure what you would do. So you can, but you can make that decision. Whatever gender you would lean toward in for purposes of exercising. So anyway, I found that very useful, and it was more accurate than 220 minus my age, and I had a good workout and did not feel bad afterwards. So I recommend it as an easy way to figure out your heart rate zones. Now, if you are working on some kind of apparatus that calculates watts while you're working on them, when you have that, you can do an FTP test. Now, the thing is, if you're using a spin bike, the bikes that they have at the Mansfield Community Center have a readout that shows you how many watts you're putting out, how much effort of energy that you are putting out while you're working out. And the watts are very different than my trainer, so I have a smart trainer with a real road bike attached to it. And my FTP, but so FTP is your functional threshold of power. That's the level at which you start, instead of burning oxygen, you start burning lactate. You start burning lactic acid, and that's the threshold that you cross over into that. And it's a watt. The number is a wattage, and so your heart rate can vary at that wattage depending how you're feeling that day. So, but it's a more accurate evaluation of your work. So a few years ago, before the pandemic, I had got my FTP up to 157. So my maximum threshold power, or my functional threshold of power, was 157 watts, which I thought was pretty good for my size and age and all kinds of stuff. And then when I got on the bike, I got on Zwift after having issues with chronic Lyme and post-vax syndrome, and I tried to do a workout, and they have workouts that are set for your wattage. They'll set at your various levels based on your FTP. And when I got on it, I got onto a wattage that I used to be able to turn the pedals. I could not turn the pedals. So I'm like, okay, I have to do an FTP test. So you do an FTP test, and they have FTP tests. So you can do FTP tests. There are apps that will take you through an FTP test. You can attach a heart rate monitor to yourself, and you do an FTP test that way. And then also, if you're on a machine that has wattage on it, you can do an FTP test that way. So what it has to do is has to calculate your average wattage over a certain period of time. So you get a warm-up, then you get your a level at which you're supposed to stay. Work as hard as you can comfortably work for an extended period of time. It could be as much as 20 minutes. It could be as much as 40 minutes. So there are long FTP tests and short FTP tests, and I've done the short one. And so the last time I did it, my wattage was 126. And so it had gone from 157 to 126. So I reset. So everything reset in Zwift. So I was able to do the workouts much more comfortably, and I was able to turn the pedals. And then there were some workouts. Sometimes when you do workouts on Zwift, there's some workouts and some rides that you do where they will say, we detected an increase in FTP. And that happened to me. I was, they had the baseline training in Zwift. So one of the workouts I did might have been the attack workout. I did that workout, and it said, we detected an increase in your FTP. So I am getting a little bit stronger. So my FTP is now 128, according to Zwift. So anyway, so it's a little bit more. And you're supposed to really, if you're doing workouts where you are regularly training based on wattage, you're supposed to do an FTP test every 2 weeks. And it can be gratifying, especially if your FTP goes up. So I might do another FTP test soon. See, I wasn't doing an FTP test when the wattage increased. I was doing a workout on Zwift. So I might do an FTP test and see where I'm at, you know, especially as we're getting into the outdoor riding season. It would be nice to see if my strength had increased. I kind of hope it has, of course. Who doesn't want to be strong? And I was, you know, last year I wasn't able to work out a lot because my knee was out so much. And my knee has been very stable. I'm very excited about that. When I work out, I still wear that bamboo-laden brace. and it works out fine. I don't have pain in my knees right now, and I'm not sure 100% what to attribute that to. One of it may be that taking the Buhner herbs for Lyme disease over so much time is clearing out more and more spirochete, and I don't have as much spirochete on board, so it's not attacking my knees as much. That's going on. And then I've just really dialed in some good supplements. And I think the supplements that are helping me the most with my knee is probably fish oil, collagen, and the Perna, which is the green-lipped mussel, which I talked about last week. Very, very excited about the green-lipped mussel. I'm starting to recommend green-lipped mussel to patients and other people. So, and the cool thing about green-lipped mussel to review is that it has essential fatty acids in it, and it also has, so essential fatty acids are anti-inflammatory. They increase your PGE1 and PGE2 series, which are prostaglandin series that are anti-inflammatory in your body. And green-lipped mussel also contains glycosaminoglycans. And glycosaminoglycans are structural for collagen in your joint space and ligaments and tendons. So it's a really easy way to get the glycosaminoglycans on board. So I'm taking collagen as well, and I'm also taking a supplement that has amino acids that are building blocks of collagen. So the supplement is intended to increase your nitric oxide and to increase the integrity of your endothelium, the inside of your blood vessels, which is great if you have high blood pressure, which I do. So I'm hoping that if I take this stuff, I won't have to increase my blood pressure medicine dose. And I'm sitting at 5 milligrams of lisinopril. When I took 7.5 milligrams, I didn't feel well. So I'm always taking supplements to assist with my blood pressure. And this is a different mechanism, whereas the lisinopril is an ACE inhibitor, so it calms the blood vessels down. It sends out bradykinins, which are actually kind of inflammatory, which is why you get the cough when you take ACE inhibitors. And I do have a little bit of a cough. It is manageable, though. If I make sure to stay hydrated, the cough doesn't really bother me. But I will find myself having a dry cough now and again. There are people who take ACE inhibitors who just can't take them because the dry cough. I had a patient come in who said it was like she had bronchitis. She just couldn't do it. So I take this 5 milligram dose of lisinopril, and it's as an ACE inhibitor, it interrupts the renin-angiotensin cycle, which ultimately causes you to let go of more salt and water. So you have to stay hydrated because you lose more water. So here I am staying hydrated. So this has very little salt in it. It has mostly potassium and a little magnesium and some other stuff in it. So and trace minerals, which is very nice. The amino acids are citrulline, lysine, proline, and arginine. And what those things do is they help to build collagen and they enhance nitric oxide function. And nitric oxide function, when you have good nitric oxide function, you have good oxygenation to your blood vessels. You have more relaxed blood vessels in general, which is also one of the mechanisms of the lisinopril. It does relax your blood vessels as well, but it relaxes your blood vessel and helps you to have more regular contractions of your arteries because you have better integrity of the collagen inside your blood vessels. So it's these four great amino acids. So L-citrulline, I've talked about it in the past. L-citrulline is called that because it comes from the citrullus plant. Do you know what the citrullus plant is? This is a very yummy plant that you generally interact with in the summer. It is the beloved watermelon. So L-citrulline comes from watermelon. It's great. And so it's extracted from there. L-citrulline is converted by the body to L-arginine, and there are studies that show that you will increase your L-arginine more by consuming L-citrulline than you will by taking L-arginine. But I'm taking both. And the other thing you have to be concerned about, if you're taking L-arginine, if you have a history of herpes simplex, so you get cold sores or you get herpes in your mouth or you get genital herpes, if your arginine to lysine ratio is off, if your arginine to lysine ratio is too high or your lysine to arginine ratio is too low, whichever one, the herpes virus is like arginine, and they will, you're more likely to have an outbreak. So because this stuff has more lysine in it, it has the lysine and arginine are balanced, it shouldn't be a problem, unless you're really, really sensitive. I have not had a problem. Very, very happy about that. So we got those couple of things on as well. So I have the collagen, and I have the Perna, the greenlet mussel, and I have these amino acids. And of course, I'm taking vitamin C as well. And I eat things with vitamin C, like fruits and vegetables and berries. And I'm not doing a lot of citrus, but I am doing berries. I do squeeze lemon into things and have lemon drinks and things like that. But I haven't been eating, I haven't been going after the citrus fruits for no particular reason. But I'm getting vitamin C in other vegetables and in berries, and I'm taking vitamin C pills as well. So we got that covered. Very interesting. All right, so that's what's going on there. I think Ron is getting slightly better along with he's taking chiropractic and doing icing and stretching and stuff, and I think he's gradually getting a little bit better and also treating the Lyme disease. All right, so one of the things that we wanted to do is, because today is March, if you're listening to Radio Naturopath on WHUS, today is March 5th for you, and so this is the last time I will promote or talk about the Know Your Farmer Fair. So shout out to Sarah Kelleher, who sent me the information. I have a little flyer here that I can read off to you. So it's the Know Your Farmer Fair. You can meet a farmer, you can create a relationship, and build community. This is the 10th anniversary of the Know Your Farmer Fair. So the first Know Your Farmer Fair happened in 2015. Where was I? I think I remember going to the first Know Your Farmer Fair in, I think I went in 2020, in the beginning of the pandemic. So it would have been, you know, early March. Well, I mean, it might have been late February, and things hadn't, it was like we were 2 weeks away of everything being shut down. And I remember there were people wearing masks at that Know Your Farmer Fair. That was my first awareness of it. And I still have at that Know Your Farmer Fair, there were some people who keep alpacas and who comb them and take their wool and make stuff out of the alpaca wool. And I got a ball of alpaca wool that you throw in your dryer. So I still have it, and I use it in the dryer every time I dry clothes in the clothes dryer. And I take the ball of alpaca wool, and I sprinkle some lavender essential oil on it, and I throw it in the dryer, and it helps. I suppose it helps to reduce static in my clothes, and it's a nice natural way to do that without using, you know, resins and things from. It's just exchanges electrons without being toxic. It's very nice. So anyway, the Know Your Farmer Fair is happening on Saturday, March the 8th, 2025, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. It's happening at the Wyndham Community Center, which is at 1 Gilson Square in Willimantic. Everyone is welcome. The admission is no charge, and there will be local products there. And there'll be things like vegetables, fruit, meat, cheese, honey, maple syrup, flowers, soap, fiber, and more farm-made items. And when I went the last couple of years, that there was a lady there, I think her name is Elaine, and she sews beautiful coasters. And the coasters are not very expensive, and they make great gifts. And that was so I'm very pleased with them. And I have a bunch of them through the house. I got some at the Know Your Farmer Fair, and I also there was, Donna Dufresne also had a fair at the blueberry farm, and she was there as well. So I saw her a couple of times, and one of them has one of my spirit animals, which is the axolotl. I was wearing the axolotl T-shirt that I got from Tina last week. So I have an axolotl coaster that I really enjoy. And I have dragonfly coasters and other stuff too. So I think I have a bee coaster as well. So anyway, that should be exciting. It doesn't say it on here, but the last couple of times there was a Know Your Farmer Fair, there were food trucks there as well. So that I'm guessing that will be the case. I don't know for sure because it doesn't say, but there may be food trucks there as well. So that's a nice thing. You can go to the Know Your Farmer Fair. You can get some nice stuff and you can get lunch. And if you don't get lunch at the food truck, you'll be in downtown Willimantic, and there's all kinds of places you could go in downtown Willimantic. And downtown Willimantic has become a really fun place to go and get different kinds of treats and goodies. Anyway, so let's repeat that one more time. The Know Your Farmer Fair. It's the 10th anniversary You can meet a farmer, create a relationship, build community. It's on Saturday, March 8th, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Wyndham Community Center, 1 Gilson Square in Willimantic. Everyone is welcome. The entry is no charge. There will be local products and all kinds of good stuff there. There will be a farmer's market, a CSA fair. There will be children's activities and a seed swap. So if you have some seeds that you're proud of that you got from some heirloom plants that you grew, you can bring them in and you can swap them for other seeds. Let's talk a little bit more about osteoarthritis. Let's talk about ligament protomorphogens. That's one of the things that I'm taking. I am taking some products that are known as fundamental supplements. They provide essential nutrients to support the body's muscle function and support tissue health and the protection of cells and help support healthy collagen production and repair. So I'm not just taking the Perna, I'm also taking this supplement that's a combination of ligaments and tendons and nutrients to support the health of ligaments and tendons. Gymnasts, runners, weightlifters, and high performance and professional athletes have used this product. Also cyclists, to be specific, there's a certain brand, which I'm not going to say because, you know, community radio. There's vitamin C, and manganese is a trace mineral that helps with to support collagen. So those are two of the things that are in it. Vitamin C and manganese both help to support collagen formation and repair and growth. Manganese is also a cofactor for one of the amino acids I'm taking, which is proline. And it's needed for the actual production of collagen and cartilage. So no matter your age or activity level, it could be beneficial. So our bodies still need nutrients to support collagen and elastin tissues in our ligaments and tendons, and our normal everyday activities put stress on our ligaments and tendon. So we're talking yard work, we're talking shoveling snow, we're talking taking out the garbage. When we see gains in our workouts, or if we simply restore and renew tissues, the supplements can give the extra boost we need. There is bovine bone and veal bone extract. So if you're a vegan, you're not going to like this product. If you don't mind that there's animal stuff in it, then it's fine. So it helps to specifically stimulate the process in which your connective tissue heals. Athletes generally use this product because it has some buckwheat in it, which supports your anti-inflammatory responses in your body. So buckwheat is a good food to eat as long as you can eat. It's not a grain. It's a pseudo grain. It's really a seed. And the cool thing about buckwheat is it's high in rutin. So rutin is a bioflavonoid that is anti-inflammatory. And if you're not an athlete, it still can help you with cellular recovery and growth process. The proteins that are found in our liver stimulate other organs in our bodies. So there's carbamide in the supplement that stimulates our tissue fluid metabolism, which helps keep joints healthy because it helps them maintain proper fluid levels. So that's one of the things that you can take. That's a ligament protomorphogen. So that is there are certain companies that sell that. Then there's magnesium, and we talk about magnesium kind of ad nauseum because magnesium is so important. It is, I believe it is the most abundant mineral in our bodies. So osteoarthritis is a debilitating age-related skeletal disease, and the hallmark is the degeneration of cartilage in your joints that cushions them during movement. And you can have chronic pain and disability. Like I said, I'm doing pretty well right now. Magnesium is a critical trace element in the human body, plays a pivotal role in metabolism, homeostasis, and energy balance. Humans get magnesium mostly from their diet. However, you can have inadequate magnesium, and it's not unusual. I see it all the time. Magnesium status goes down with aging, probably in part because people aren't as good about eating stuff with magnesium in it, and also people's hydrochloric acid in their stomachs reduces with age, and you need hydrochloric acid to help with the absorption of magnesium. So people who are on proton pump inhibitors, if you're on any kind of acid blocking medicine, whether you take an antacid that's, you know, the over-the-counter antacid that's made with calcium carbonate, or, you know, the magnesium hydroxide, or if you take a proton pump inhibitor, That's going to be your drugs that end in prazole, omeprazole, esomeprazole, pantoprazole. Those are proton pump inhibitors, and they block the production of acid. And then there's your H2 blockers like famotidine. Ranitidine, I think, was taken off the market because there were contamination issues with it. But famotidine you can still get, and you can get it prescribed, and you can get it over the counter. So if you're taking those drugs because you have heartburn or reflux, they block your hydrochloric acid. So if you have less hydrochloric acid around, it's harder for you to absorb magnesium in addition to calcium and vitamin B12 and protein and a bunch of other stuff too. There's a growing body of clinical studies pointing to a relationship between dietary magnesium and osteoarthritis, although the conclusions are controversial. Magnesium ion concentration is essential to determine cell fate. The low concentration magnesium ions induce human fibroblast senescence. So that's aging. So if you don't have enough magnesium, your human fibroblasts, those are cells that make fibrous tissue, they're going to age faster. Magnesium supplements can also improve, they mitigate chondrocyte apoptosis. So that means chondrocytes are cells that make collagen. So you're going to have more collagen producing cells around if you have good magnesium status. And they facilitate chondrocyte proliferation and differentiation. You're just going to have more and better chondrocytes around. These are the cells that produce collagen for you, which is what your joints and your ligaments and tendons are made of. There was a study that outlined the existing evidence in animals and humans and discuss the controversies on plasma or intracellular levels of magnesium as the indicator of magnesium status, and if they put forward the interplay between dietary magnesium and intestinal microbiome to modify the inflammatory milieu in the conjecture of osteoarthritis pathogenesis, that led to an emerging hypothesis that the synergistic effect of magnesium and probiotics may open a new avenue for the prevention and treatment of osteoarthritis. So you want to be getting good probiotics on board, have a good microbiome, as well as adequate magnesium. All right, so magnesium is really important, and I've talked at length about which forms of magnesium. My favorite overall tends to be glycinate malate. It's a good all-purpose magnesium. Your body's very interested in absorbing glycine. Glycine is also one of the amino acids that's helpful in producing collagen. Glycine in the brain helps to calm you down. It helps you to sleep, and it helps to reduce pain as well. And malic acid is very good for keeping muscles functioning and soft and not painful. So that's my favorite go-to. There are many forms of magnesium and use different ones for different purposes, but that's my go-to. It depends on the person and depends what I'm trying to do, which one I might recommend. All right, so let's see what Dr. Axe has to say about osteoarthritis. He's got some natural ideas for natural treatments. The first one is to reach and maintain a healthy weight. So if you have too much weight and you're not able to carry yourself at the weight you're at, it can weigh you down and cause problems to your joints that are also already sensitive and partially damaged. So if you have excess fat, it's not just that the weight that you're causing your joints to support that weight. Fat has inflammatory tissue in it. It has inflammatory chemicals. It releases hormones and chemicals that increase inflammation. And so that can contribute to worsening over your whole body. I don't like to force people to lose weight. And when I talk about fat loss, I think I frustrate people sometimes, because in my years and years of practice, it's very hard for people to lose weight. It's easy for them to lose weight if they take the GLP-1 drugs. And GLP-1 drugs come at a cost, both financial and the fact that you have to make sure you take them your whole life, and they have a lot of side effects. So I try to encourage people to, if they want to lose weight, don't focus on fat loss. Focus on all the healthy habits that may lead to fat loss. And whether you lose weight, you're still going to be healthier. So if you drink plenty of water, eat plenty of fiber, minimize your dairy, especially if you're a female, if you avoid most starch and sugar, if you eat adequate protein, if you get good sleep, if you do restorative activities, if you reduce your stress overall, you're going to tend to sit at a lower weight. And if you get regular exercise, and if some of the exercise that you do is resistance training that you build, where you build muscle mass, though, that's going to help with fat loss. So if you do that, even if you don't lose a significant amount of weight, you'll probably lose some. And it takes a lot less time to reduce your inflammatory status than it does to get to some ideal weight that you have in your head. So say you're like, well, I'm 160 pounds. I want to get down to 130 pounds. I caution people against that because if they don't hit that target, they're going to be very disappointed. And fat loss is neither linear, fair, nor predictable. And so it's much better to focus on the things that you might do to lose fat. And I don't mean going on a restrictive ketogenic diet. I mean, getting into healthy habits. If you wake up in the morning and every morning you have coffee with really sweet creamer of some time, maybe lose the really sweet creamer and use some stevia or monk fruit and a whole bunch of cinnamon instead. Maybe use a non-dairy creamer that's natural and healthy, that's made from almond or coconut milk and not a lot of it. Or learn to have your coffee black or drink some kinds of tea. So those are simple habits that you can change. If you have that habit of you come home and you've been out all day and working and then you just snack all night, you have to look at that snacking all night. Could you eat a supper that has a good deal of protein in it? And then if you still feel hungry later, have a healthy snack instead of like just snacking on various things. Mindfully make yourself a snack that isn't too high in calories, but is fulfilling. So you could get things like jerky and meat sticks and have some fruit with it, or have nut butter, nuts and seeds and fruit, and have that as a snack. And that's going to be much better for you than if you're picking on chocolate and sweets and ice cream and chips and things like that. So you have to take a good look and see if the habits that you have are really what's contributing to your difficulty with fat loss. The thing that people say when they take the GLP-1 drugs is that it reduces the food noise, that people are just not thinking about food all the time. And so what the GLP-1 drugs ultimately do is they make you eat less and they make you feel uncomfortable if you overeat. So that's something that I've heard as well. Like if you eat a little too much, you feel like you had Thanksgiving dinner. I for one would rather have my own satiety and know what my satiety is without having a drug overseeing it. And if one of the side effects of a drug is nausea, I'm out. I can't do nausea. I'm a bit of an emetophobe, meaning I have a fear of vomiting, seeing other people vomit, or me myself doing it. So and I don't like feeling nauseous. I don't like to function with nausea. So I'm out. I'm just not going there. I would rather be chubby than be nauseous. So anyway, because I have so many peri and postmenopausal women coming in who are tired of their meno belly, I haven't figured out how to get rid of my meno belly, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to, but I know there's some habits that I could change. So I need to work on changing those habits so I can see if it can be done. I need to, I need to work on it myself and then use those results to help other people. I'm already just telling people all these basic things that they can do, and I'm not doing all of them. And so if I would just follow them, none of them include taking a GLP-1 enhancer. They include eating fiber, not overeating carbs, not eating junk, getting rid of that sweet creamer, all those kinds of things, and drinking plenty of water. Let's have some more water. Why don't we? There's just some really basic things that you can do. And like I said, if you spend 2 weeks eating an anti-inflammatory diet, staying away from too much starch and sugar, staying away from sweets, eating all healthy whole foods, after 2 weeks, you're going to feel a lot better, even if you haven't lost very much weight or if you've lost, just a couple pounds. You feel infinitely better in 2 weeks than you did, you know, when you started out. And because you feel so good, you might want to continue that path to in order to continue to feel good. And you will probably slowly begin to lose weight. So there are patients who are overweight or obese and have arthritis in parts of their body, like their hands, which don't really support extra body weight, but are still impacted by the negative effect of inflammation. An increase in stored fat cells can speed up the rate at which joints break down, especially in people who have other risk factors for arthritis. So your hands are good. If you eat an anti-inflammatory diet, even if you're at a weight that's higher than what you're at now, after a couple of weeks or a month, your hands are probably going to feel better. You're going to have less inflammation and pain. So how do you improve your diet? You do things like you eat foods with omega-3 fatty acids. They are terrific for lowering inflammation and have other benefits. Wild-caught fish like salmon is a great food of choice because salmon spends a lot of time in fresh water, so it doesn't tend to bioaccumulate heavy metals. You can eat grass-fed beef. Grass-fed beef does have omega-3 fatty acids in it. You can eat nuts and seeds, so flax seeds, chia seeds, and walnuts, which are great choices for getting alpha-linolenic acid, which is another precursor to your omega-3 fatty acids that you use in your body. Foods that are high in sulfur. Foods that are high in sulfur bear MSM, methylsulfonyl methane, and MSM is a supplement that you can take, and you can also eat them in food. It reduces joint inflammation and helps rebuild your tissue. MSM has been shown in studies to lower pain and function impairment compared to placebo groups. You can get sulfur-bearing foods include onions, garlic, asparagus, and cabbage. Any of those foods that tend to be a little bit stinky. So onions and garlic are, of course, in the allium family. They contain isothiocyanates. So the thio, anytime anything has thio anything in it, that means it has sulfur in it. So onions and garlic are good sources of those. I can't eat them because they bother my stomach, although I wonder if one of the reasons I can't eat them is the FODMAPs, and now that they have the FODMAP fructan hydrolase enzyme available, I might try that and see if it makes it so I can eat onions and garlic. Asparagus, I'm not a huge fan of asparagus, and I'm okay with cabbage. I prefer sauerkraut. I don't eat that all the time. I feel like we could do better in eating sulfur-bearing foods, Ron and I, that we could eat more broccoli than we do. Bone broth, which when Ron makes soup, he puts bone broth in the soup. So bone broth is a natural source of collagen, and it's another way to get your proline and glycine on board. And those things help rebuild connective tissue and have a lot more benefits. And bone broth also has some chondroitin and glucosamine in it. And they lower inflammation and improve arthritis and joint pain. Foods that are high in antioxidants. So again, fruits and vegetables. Colorful fruits and veggies have a lot of antioxidants. Vitamin C, vitamin A, fiber, magnesium, potassium, digestive enzyme, and anti-inflammatory compounds. And there's loads of fruits that can be helpful. So fruits and vegetables, leafy greens, cruciferous vegetables. Those are the ones that are kind of stanky, your cabbage family, your mustard family. So that's going to be your broccoli, your cauliflower, your Brussels sprouts, and berries. So I have berries most days. And my favorites are raspberries, blueberries, and blackberries, strawberries when they're in season. Melon, papaya, avocado, and pineapple. And Ron is a big fan of the avocado. I am too. And so he eats at least one avocado every day. I have avocado when he puts it in my salad and when I think to put it in a sandwich or something. And then foods that are high in fiber. Fiber helps control your appetite. It's good for your digestive health and lowers the risk for other diseases and complications. So guess what? Vegetables, fruit, ancient grains. So he says ancient grains. So when he says whole grains, he doesn't want you eating, you know, modern wheat. He's talking about things like einkorn or heritage wheat or pseudo grains like buckwheat, quinoa, and amaranth. And those are not actually grains. They're pseudo grains. because they're not in the grain family. Legumes and beans that have been soaked, we prefer them soaked because then it gets rid of the phytates, and those are compounds that block the absorption of minerals. Nuts and seeds, flax seeds, chia seeds, and walnuts seem to be Dr. Axe's favorites. I guess they're the highest in the omega-3 fatty acids, they're not going to be high in EPA and DHA, because EPA and DHA are only found in animals. So you can get your EPA and DHA from your green-lipped mussel, from your salmon, from your from anchovies and mackerel. And when you get fish oil from the store, it's usually anchovies, mackerel, and or sardines. That's where they get it from. So they tend not to bioaccumulate metals, and good fish oil is going to be tested for heavy metals and molds anyway. So that's not going to have those things in it. I've had people come in and say, I don't want to take fish oil. It could have mold and heavy metals in it. And like, no, you can get brands that absolutely test for that and don't have any of that in it. I take fish oil every day. And the one that I have, I believe it's mackerel, sardines, and or anchovies. That's what it comes from. And it doesn't taste like that. It's very mild tasting. It's flavored with lemon. It's very palatable. So avoiding certain foods as part of an anti-inflammatory diet can be really helpful. Excess sugar, hydrogenated oils like soybean, cottonseed, and canola oil. Refine conventional grains, so grains containing gluten. Now, if you are not gluten intolerant and you eat a little bit of sourdough, you might be okay. If you eat a little bit of sprouted grain, or if you're eating heritage wheat like einkorn or emmer or other wheat that has not been hybridized, you might be okay. But that should be a small part of your diet. It shouldn't be the bulk of your diet. The bulk of your diet needs to be protein and produce. And so avoiding flour altogether can be helpful, and avoiding wheat altogether can be helpful. If you have an autoimmune disease, you might benefit, not necessarily for sure, but you might benefit from avoiding nightshades. So nightshades would be your potatoes, tomatoes, eggplant, and peppers. And so some people have problems with nightshades and some people don't. All right. Another thing that helps with arthritis is staying active. You think, oh, you have to stay off the joint. Now, if you're in acute pain, you may have to stay off the joint, but I was able to find a sweet spot where I was able to exercise gently, and that got me back into it. And I support the joints that are bothering me, and so I'm able to exercise. And one of the things that my orthopedist told me was, you need to get your knees strong. And so I've been doing yoga and special knee exercises and riding my bike. And he encouraged me to ride my bike. And he said, you need to be you need to exercise more intensely. I don't know what he thought I was doing. He may have looked at my body habitus and said, she's not exercising very much, and he has no idea. I think people get prejudiced against chubby people and don't realize that there are chubby people who are absolutely extremely fit, that do yoga pretty much every day right here and ride their bikes most days of the week right here, and just happen to be chubby for other reasons, like they're postmenopausal and running a business and snacking on sweet things because they don't have time to rest, and they don't necessarily realize that. I'm unusual in that way, that most people who come in, because I know what my patients tell me when my patients come in and I ask them what they're doing for exercise. Well, I walk, but it was too cold. Well, I walk, but it was too hot. It was raining. It was snowy. It was icy. And they have all these reasons why they don't exercise. And, you know, they were exercising until they went on vacation, and then they got off track, and they came back from the vacation 2 months ago, and they just never got back to it. So people do not prioritize exercise. And I think that's cultural. Our culture does not prioritize exercise. I'm just very fortunate that I do. And I've made it a part of my life since I was in my 20s. And regardless of what size I have been, I've been all kinds of sizes since my 20s. I've been as low as, my weight's been as low as 129. And it's been as high as, I got up to 193 when I was 25. And then I lost all that. And then I got as high as the low 170s a few years ago. And I haven't been back to that in a long time. But my weight tends to go up and down because I have a sweet tooth, and when I get stressed, I eat sweets. And so that's the thing I need to work on. Now that I'm postmenopausal, you cannot get away with that like you could, you know, when you're in your 40s or 30s. So I have to work on that. Anyway, people with arthritis tend to be less active than those without because of the pain they feel with exercising and moving stiff body parts, but it's important to exercise. So you have to figure out what you can tolerate. And what I try to tell people is if you can get into water, that's a really good thing. If you can brace whatever part hurts, that's a good thing too. So exercising in water tends to take away the pain. So if you can move around more, and then you can graduate to doing things on land. When you exercise, it's beneficial for strengthening the muscles around the affected joints, which gives you added support and less strain. So most experts consider movement an essential part of any arthritis treatment, even stating that it's the most effective non-drug treatment for reducing pain and improving movement in people with osteoarthritis. Regular activity has shown to help to lower inflammation, regulate hormones, and prevent unnecessary replacement surgeries. So I was told by my ortho that usually with the situation I have, where I have bone-on-bone patella to femur in both knees, that what they usually do is a patellar replacement. But he said, it's not time for me to do that. And right now, the thing for me to do is get my knees really strong. So I'm doing that. And I have less pain now than I had maybe a year ago or, you know, and again, I don't know how much of this is I've gotten back to a sweet spot of exercise. And also I've got the right supplements on board and I've killed off a significant part of my Lyme disease because Lyme disease loves to eat tissues that are compromised. And Lyme, when it's eating your collagen, it gives off an enzyme called hyaluronidase. And I am unfortunately not able to take ashwagandha because it knocks me out and makes me really, really sleepy. I mean, people like to take ashwagandha because it helps them sleep. Well, I get it knocks me out. So I'm not able to take it. And it has anti-hyaluronidase in it. It's one of the herbs that's recommended for Lyme disease because of the anti-hyaluronidase and the immune boosting and the fact that it calms you down. But, you know, I'm taking other things that are both rebuilding and helping to reduce inflammation. So exercise, you want to try to do at least 150 minutes of moderate intensity per week. So I think on my Strava, it said I'm exercising nearly 5 hours a week lately. I haven't, you know, I'm not doing huge amounts of time because I'm not on the road biking. I tend to exercise longer if I'm riding outdoors because, you know, when we get into longer rides, they're going to be 2 or 3 hours long per ride. And I might do one or two of those a week. Right now, my longest ride has been less than 2 hours on the trainer. But I'm getting up to an hour and a half to a $1.45 on the trainer right now. And then, you know, half hour sessions of weights and then yoga. I'm doing yoga for longer bits of time. So I think I'm getting my one. What's 150 minutes? 150 minutes is 120 minutes is 2 hours. So that's 2.5 hours. So yeah, I'm definitely there. So good. So good things. And that's 150 minutes of moderate exercise and only 75 minutes of vigorous exercise is going to be helpful for you. So some of my exercise is vigorous and some of it is moderate. Anyway, so you want to do daily stretches for improved range of motion and flexibility. So I do that. You want to do some brisk walking. I haven't been walking again because it's too cold outside and it's icy, but I do. I'm set up to do trainer rides. So I ride indoors, and I'm doing a good amount of that. Aerobic activity, like aquatic exercises, walking, jogging, cycling, swimming, or using the elliptical machine. And then strength training, which I'm doing. You can use whatever weights you can manage. Even light weights will be helpful, and body weight works. And doing yoga where you're doing more active yoga. So I do yin and restorative yoga to stretch and calm myself down. And I do vinyasa yoga that helps me, that's somewhat cardiovascular. And it's also helps to strengthen some of those important muscles. You can get chiropractic care, which I am doing. I try to get people to get chiropractic all the time, and they're like, I don't want to be cracked. And I'm like, then find a chiropractor who uses an activator or non-force manipulation of some kind, and they're definitely out there. So shout out to my chiropractor, Scott Gregoric, who does use the activator method. And, you know, all you need to do is call around wherever you live and ask if your chiropractor does activator or non-force manipulation of some kind. You can also get osteopathic manipulation, which again, you want to find out if it's non-force, if you don't want to have the regular, traditional manipulative therapy. They can help treat your arthritis in the neck, your back, your spine. My chiropractor adjusts my knees too. A good chiropractor can adjust anything. A good chiropractor can adjust organs for you. So if you have heartburn and reflux, ask if your chiropractor can fix a hiatal hernia and help you with that. And studies have shown that acupuncture and chiropractic help to reduce osteoarthritis pain. And medical schools and the NIH now recommend acupuncture as a natural treatment for low back pain and many other conditions, including osteoarthritis. So I had acupuncture on Friday. So I get regular acupuncture every few weeks, and I get chiropractic as often as I can get in there. You can go to chiropractic offices. So let's review those again. Reach and maintain a healthy weight. Again, don't stress about the numbers. Just do the things. The fiber, the water, the exercise, the get rid of junkies, food. Eat fruits and vegetables. Eat clean protein. Limit your dairy. Limit your sweets. Drink lots of water. And eat omega-3 fatty acids, high sulfur foods, high antioxidant foods. And do all those things. And whether you lose a significant amount of weight, you're going to reduce your inflammation. Stay active. Do your physical activity. What's the best exercise for you? The one you'll do. Of course, it's a good idea to do some resistance training and some cardio. Get chiropractic care. You can also take, so there's more stuff on here that we can talk about. And so you know what? I think it's time for me to pick up on this next week. And we'll start by talking about proteolytic enzymes, because inflammatory compounds are proteins. So you take enzymes that break them down, that can be helpful. So I'm going to start there next week. And I have to let you go. So I'm going to be at the Know Your Farmer Fair, Saturday, March 8th, 2025, somewhere between 11 and 2 p.m. And so you can go there at that time. 1 Gilson Square in Willimantic, Connecticut. Hope to see you there. And now I'm going to sign off. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS stores, and WHUS.org.